Well, you guys, the last episode we talked about the inaugural year of the Marvel Legends line, 2002. This time around, let's talk about the following year, 2003. I had so much fun talking about just thinking about like the early days of Marvel Legends collecting that, you know what? I'm super excited. And well, since I have a lot to talk about, this is going to be a two-parter episode. So this is going to be part one, and episode 11 is going to be part two. So you know what? Let's go ahead and get started. What is going on, you guys? My name is Ramney, and this is an Oral History of Marvel Legends podcast. Before we get started with our topic for this podcast episode, I do want to play another voice message that I got. And here you go. Well, have a listen.
Hi, Ramney. This is Forrest from Ohio. I just wanted to let you know that I'm really enjoying the podcast. Thank you so much for doing it. I'm a relatively new collector for Marvel Legends, and it's been a really great resource. I don't know if you're taking suggestions or requests, but as a new collector, I would really love to hear your take on what are the definitive versions of major characters, particularly if there's an eye towards availability. But I realize that's a lot to ask, and it varies tremendously by region and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you so much for that voice message, Forrest from Ohio. I definitely am listening for suggestions, and I do like your suggestion. So I did write it down in my list of podcast episode ideas. I have a few things that I do want to mention about that. It like you mentioned, it is a little bit hard to talk about the definitive characters because I guess a lot of people have different ideas in their mind of what is the definitive. For example, a lot of people like the 70s, 80s Cyclops, and a lot of people like the 90s Cyclops, for example. So depending on the comics you read, you have a different definition of what the definitive Cyclops is. So yeah, it is a little bit tough, but I can talk about what I consider my definitive figures because I do have multiples of the same character and a lot of them in the same look. But yeah, I'll tell you what I think. So that's going to be that's a great suggestion for a future podcast episode. Thank you so much. And for those of you guys who want to leave me a voice message, make sure you guys go to the description of this podcast episode. There's a link there where you guys can click and just leave a voice message, and I'll get it. And if I get it, I'll play it in the next podcast episode. So thank you so much. And yeah, I welcome all suggestions. And pretty much, if you guys have anything you want to talk about the topics that we talk about here, I'm open to them. All right, you guys, Toy Biz in 2003. This is going to be, like I said, a two-parter episode. And in this part, I'm hoping to kind of just talk about a little bit of the context of what it was like in 2003 and possibly one or two series, depending on how long this is going to take. I don't Sometimes you just got a plan for however long this is going to take. I have no idea what I'm going to say. Well, I do. I have some Cliff's notes of stuff that I wrote down from all the research that I did. I pretty much spent the past week kind of just doing some research about 2003 Toy Biz figures. It's a lot of information, so I kind of wrote down the stuff that I do want to touch up on. And so let's go ahead and get started. A little bit of context. Back in 2003, this is like 2 years after 9/11, the world was changing. Even for a person like me who is not American, you definitely feel the you definitely feel the world stage is definitely shifting. And yeah, 2003 was just it was like 2001 was still fresh in our memory, and there's a lot of stuff, like a lot of politics going on in the Middle East. So that's where this plays in, because this is kind of around the time where oil prices were starting to kind of skyrocket. In 2003, not much yet, so it was still a bit of a lull, and prices were still a little bit steady. So the MSRP, the manufacturer's suggested retail price for Marvel Legends in 2003 was about 7 to 8 US dollars, depending on where you buy them. Not sure if this is how it is in the States. I am from Canada, but in Canada, Walmart usually has them the cheapest. If you buy them at Toys R Us, they're a little bit more marked up. Trying to think of other places. Like Zellers was another place. Kmart was another place you could buy Marvel Legends at the time. And yeah, they were a little bit more marked up. But Walmart, for the most part, was where you found Legends at their cheapest. Sometimes in bins, discount bins, that kind of thing. So yeah. But around this time, prices were still steady at around 7 or 8 US dollars. At this time, movies, comic book movies were kind of hit and miss. I mean, there were a couple of Marvel movies that come out every year. Last year was, for example, Spider-Man was the big one last year, and this year you have the Ang Lee Hulk, which to me, I didn't watch it in the theaters because I thought it was, I thought I heard of a lot of bad reviews about it and how my friends thought it was boring, so I waited until it was out in Blockbuster and I rented it from Blockbuster, and I did find it boring. I think I only watched that movie once or twice. After that, I had no interest in the Hulk. I did find a lot of the like the transformation scenes I thought were pretty cool, because at the time it was like the Lou Ferrigno, Bill Bixby transformation that you had in your head. So to see Eric Bana transform into this big, huge, giant monster, CGI was a little bit shoddy at times, but when he transformed, I thought it was pretty cool. So anyway, Ang Lee Hulk came out, Daredevil came out in the beginning of the year. Daredevil at the time I thought was a pretty good film, and I still kind of think it's okay. It is pretty cheesy now that I rewatch it, but when I saw it in theaters, I thought it was awesome. Especially the whole I don't know, their take on Kingpin and their take on Bullseye, I thought were pretty, they're pretty 90s. Well, Bullseye especially, but I thought Michael Clark Duncan was pretty awesome as Kingpin, although it's hard to see him as not, it's hard to see him as a really intimidating force because you saw him in like the Green Mile and all that stuff. So it's, yeah, this guy is, he's got the build, but he's a softie. So I don't know. He was still pretty cool as the Kingpin, though. X2 came out this year as well, so that's one of the better films of the non-MCU era. X2 definitely had like that really kick-ass scene with Nightcrawler in the beginning of the movie that kind of just set the stage, set the scene, and then the rest was pretty awesome. Yeah, so really like those movies. So those were the movies that came out. This was in between Spider-Man movies, and this was in between Blade movies this year. So that's that. The Lord of the Rings. Yeah, Toy Biz was making a bunch of other figures. Lord of the Rings series 1 and series 2 were kind of being released around this time. And to me, anyway, it is my belief, and I've seen videos of this on YouTube. Spectre Creative, A YouTuber definitely has some really good insight on what he thinks happened to Toy Biz, and I do believe it as well, in that Toy Biz kind of fell by the wayside. They went bankrupt in 2007 because of a lot of tooling debt, and apparently tooling gets really, really expensive, and tooling refers to creating the molds for figures, and every time you have a new sculpt, that's a new tool essentially. And it is in my opinion that Lord of the Rings is one of like the main culprits because of how detailed the figures were. There was a lot of tooling, and I feel like that's how Toy Biz went under. It's not so much the superheroes, because for the most part superheroes more or less are like the same, I don't know, the same build. You could reuse body molds and all that stuff. But Lord of the Rings, man, seriously, those were very unique sculpts. Anyway, so Toy Biz was making Lord of the Rings figures. Not sure, there's kind of conflicting information online on whether or not the Hulk Classics came out in 2003 or 2004. I'm leaning towards 2004 because just from looking at the other reviews of the 2003 Marvel Legends figures, there's no mention of or referencing any Hulk Classics figures. So Hulk Classics must have come out later on. Anyway, what was continuing was Spider-Man Classics. Actually, what happened this time was there was a huge rebranding of Spider-Man Classics. So when we talk about Spider-Man Classics, when we say classics, it's sort of like an umbrella term of pretty much all of the Spider-Man 6-inch line. But that 6-inch Spider-Man line kind of goes different, like there's like different eras of them. So there's the actual Spider-Man Classics, which was only like two or three waves. It started in 2000 and went on to like 2002, and it kind of stopped in 2002. And then they did a rebrand. So in the beginning, Spider-Man Classics had the clamshell packaging. In the rebrand, they switched from clamshell to card back, and the word Classics was actually dropped from the name. So it just says Spider-Man on the logo just says Spider-Man, and it just says Spider-Man on the packaging. That's the line. The name of the line is Spider-Man. But according to data, according to Toy Biz, it's called Spider-Man Classic without the S. Yeah, it's a little bit confusing. So it went from Spider-Man Classics with the clamshell packaging, and then they dropped the Classics and just became Spider-Man on the packaging, but referred to as Spider-Man Classic without the S. And that's when they switched from clamshell to card back. And the reason for switching the packaging was because Marvel Legends was sort of kicking into high gear, and I believe Toy Biz wanted to change, or they wanted to focus on Marvel Legends, so they decided that Marvel Legends was going to get the clamshell packages and Spider-Man was going to be different. So they don't want to mix the two. They want Spider-Man separate and they want Marvel Legends separate. So they want them kind of unique, distinct. So Spider-Man got the card backs. And the reason I believe that they did this is because there is a distinct difference between the two. Spider-Man Classic or Classics focuses on a lot more gimmicks. Even though it's a 6-inch line, they focused on a lot of like little buttons that you press and like different variations of Spider-Man. Again, a lot of gimmicks and all that stuff. Whereas Marvel Legends did not have any of that stuff. So that's what that is. So in 2003, Spider-Man Classic debuted, and like they dropped like seven series from the get go. So like series one all the way to series seven came out around this time, and it was very overwhelming as a collector. So for me personally, I didn't really focus on the Toy Biz Spider-Man Classics line when I saw them, and when I thought that they fit the Marvel Legends line, that's when I would go pick up these figures. But for the most part, it was all like geared more towards a younger crowd. I was in high school. No, sorry, I was in college already by this time, and I was working at an office. I was actually an assistant for a newspaper, like a newspaper publishing company at this time. So I was making quite the money, and I had enough dispensable income that I could, you know, fund this new obsession of mine. So, but mind you, I wasn't collecting at this time. I actually started collecting a little bit later on, but, yeah, around this time I was kind of starting to, you know, I was making my way up the corporate ladder, I guess you could say. So, that's my personal story anyway. Anyway, so Spider-Man Classics, there's a couple of like distinct, some notable figures that came out in Spider-Man Classics. Series 1 had Lizard and Doc Ock. They're not very good. That's all I gotta say. However, Series 2 had the Hobgoblin. And I still have this Hobgoblin. It was re-released a little bit later on as Demo Goblin, but this is a pretty good figure. Like really skinny, really lanky. It's the one with the Hobgoblin with the big head, big hood that sort of covers a huge chunk of his face. And it's not like the classic Hobgoblin that we know. That comes a little bit later in Marvel Legends. But yeah, this is more of a, like a, I don't know, scary monster look. Very skinny. Yeah, like Series 2 Spider-Man Classic Hobgoblin. Not bad figure. Not a bad figure. Morbius came out in Series 5 of Spider-Man Classics. And this was the Morbius that had the rubber head. That had like this action gimmick in which you pull a lever in the back. And what it's supposed to do is it's supposed to make his mouth open up and down. But the thing was, the face was made of rubber. And over time, that rubber deteriorates. And what happened with mine was that I had put it in a Ziploc bag and put it in a big, huge Rubbermaid bin. And when I went to go get it a couple years later, because I lived in Canada at the time, and then when I came back and got all my figures or looked through my figures, they were like this Morbius, his face literally melted to the side of the Ziploc. And it became flattened by the Ziploc bag. Yeah, it's not a good sight. Yeah, anyway, Morbius was in Series 5. There were a couple of figures in Series 6 that was cool. Kraven the Hunter came out then. And Daredevil and Parachute Spider-Man. These are notable. Like, all the Spider-Man figures that at around this time were pretty, well, in today's standards, they're pretty lame, I guess. They're like Catapult Spider-Man, Water Web Spider-Man. They all have these gimmicks. Sticky Web Spider-Man, Crate Spider-Man. This was in Series 6, the Parachute Spider-Man. And there's something that's very distinct about that figure, and I'll talk about it a little bit later on. But yeah, keep that in mind. As well as the Daredevil that came out around this time, or it was called the Stunt Daredevil. So that came out as well. Yeah, so I'll talk about those a little bit later on while we're talking about 2003. The other notable thing was Series 7's Green Goblin was the Humberto Ramos Green Goblin. design, which was a pretty cool design. I really liked that one. And yeah, it's pretty unique. And the only one that we have of that design. So worth getting if you guys don't have it yet. So that's Spider-Man Classics. There's no X-Men Classics at this time yet. Diamond Select Toys did come out in 2002, and they started off with four figures, Ultimate Spider-Man, Punisher, Elektra, and Black Widow. This year, in 2003, they focused a lot on the Ultimate Universe with Ultimate Venom, Ultimate Hulk, Ultimate Iron Man, which is a pretty cool figure. A Wolverine origin figure, and Black Cat. And these guys, Diamond Select, that around this time, articulation was not there, so these guys were mostly statues, similar to what McFarlane Toys was putting out there. And I'm thinking that Diamond Select sort of was more in competition with McFarlane Toys than they are with Marvel Legends and Toy Biz, really, because yeah, Diamond Select was focusing a lot more on sculpt than the playability of their figures. And yeah, around this time, like I mentioned in the past episode, they were focusing on the Ultimates line and and the Marvel Knights line. So that's why you got these figures. With Toy Biz, they definitely, like around this time, they touted articulation, and that was their selling point for Marvel Legends. So if you look at the packaging for the Marvel Legends around this time, you'll see that they advertise the amount of articulations there are per figure. So you'll see, 34 points of articulation, 30 something points of articulation on each of these figures. And to be honest, it's just articulation for the sake of having more articulation, and they're not necessarily the type of articulation that makes sense. But again, Toy Biz was experimenting this time, and yeah, I'm not a big fan of those individually articulated fingers, but that's what Toy Biz was doing. So yeah, I mean, they definitely sold it, because that's what makes this line different than the previous figures, than the other figures out in the market, is because of their hyper articulation. So yeah, definitely. Like I mentioned earlier, there was no Spider-Man movie that came out around this time. This is actually a period in between two Spider movies, Spider-Man 1, which came out the year before, and Spider-Man 2, which will come out in 2004. So there was no Spider-Man. There were no new Spider-Man movie figures, but there were still a lot of Spider-Man 1 action figures on the shelves around this time. The Spider-Man 1 figures were kind of, how do you say this? It's like most of it was gimmicky. A lot of it was a lot of like more sculpt than articulation, but there were a couple of figures in that line that was definitely articulated. The Green Goblin, for example, with the glider, that's the Willem Dafoe Green Goblin that came out around this time. It was pretty articulated. The Spider-Man movie figure was also pretty articulated around this time as well. But the others, you have a pink dress Mary Jane, J. Jonah Jameson on a desk, and a bunch of variations of Spider-Man. They're all really not that well articulated. So yeah, so that's that. So it would be another year until we get brand new Spider-Man action figures. At this time, I wasn't collecting, but these guys were on the shelves. I think, is that it? For context, oh yeah, let's talk about the comic books that was around at this time as well. In 2003, the biggest thing in Marvel Comics really is like the Ultimates universe. So around this time, Ultimate Spider-Man was huge. But also around this time was when the Ultimates, which was the Ultimate Universe's version of the Avengers, was kind of a big deal. So this was, you know, they created Hulk that was kind of cannibalistic and a bit of a sexual predator, I think, if I remember. Captain America was, he had a gun and he killed people. That's not 616 Cap, right? So Thor was kind of a hippie. It was art was like Brian Hitch, Mark Millar wrote the book. It was pretty good. Like the first couple issues or the first stories of the Ultimates was definitely awesome. Around this time too was the Grant Morrison, Frank Whiteley was leading the new X-Men. And this one was, the costumes were inspired by the movies. So this was around the time that the X-Men were dressed in matching black uniform with yellow trim. Not the best look, to be honest. This is kind of like around the time that the Beast kind of had the second mutation and became more cat-like. So it was around, it was this story arc. It was around this time that happened. So yeah, so that's 2003 in a nutshell with like the biggest comic book stories that I can find and I can think of. So we're about 25 minutes into this podcast and we're just talking about context still. So that's why this 2003 is going to be split into two episodes. Anyway, so I think having said all of that with 2003, a lot of cool, exciting things were happening. Let's talk about Marvel Legends now. So in 2002, there was Series 1, Series 2, and then Series 3 came out in December of 2002, just in time for the Christmas holidays. 2003, we didn't get any brand new Marvel Legends until June. So there was like a lot of months without a new release of Marvel Legends. So yeah, 6 months of no Marvel Legends. And all of the Marvel Legends that came out in 2003 came out in the latter half of the year. So June, and then two in September, and then one wave or one series in November. So it was like a whole bunch of nothing and then everything. So let's talk about Series 4, which is where we were, or it's where we left off. And Series 4 had four figures and one chase figure. Let's talk about each one of them. So if you look at the pattern of Marvel Legends before Series 4, you'll notice that there's at least one villain in each one. Toad was in Series 1. Dr. Doom was in Series 2. And then you have Magneto in Series 3. But if you look at Series 4, there's really not one villain. You do, however, have two anti-villains. And I guess having two anti-villains makes one villain. Right? So, yeah. If you look at the card back, or if you look at the back of the packaging for Series 4, you'll notice that there are only four figures advertised. Those are the Punisher, the Beast, Elektra, and Gambit. But the chase figure is Goliath. And that one's a special case, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But first, let's talk about Beast. Beast was a pretty awesome figure. Now, I personally think that this is one of the best Beast figures, and I don't know, it still kind of holds its own now, and it's still kind of toe-to-toe with the brand new Beast that we got from Hasbro just a year or so ago. this beast that we got had the most articulation of any Marvel Legends figure at the time at 39. So Beast had the most articulation, or held the record with for having the most articulation at this time. The funny thing with this beast is that there's only a swivel at the hips, but no ab crunch. What this figure has that makes it so articulated is it's got like a hinge and a peg at the neck. Like there are several, there's like three points of articulation already at the neck, and then it's got a movable jaw. I think there's 4 points of articulation at the neck. I don't have it on me right now. I'm looking at pictures, but it looks like it moves at the top and moves at the bottom. And then you have fingers that articulated, and you have a thumb that articulates. So that's what adds to the articulation there, are the opposing thumbs. Again, articulation for the sake of saying you have a lot of articulation. You still have rotating hinge wrists, and then you have a up and down motion on the hand as well. It's an odd look, and I think the pointer finger, like the middle, or sorry, the pointing finger, index finger, is also individually articulated, and then the last three fingers, middle, ring, and pinky, are also, they're articulated together. So yeah, it's a lot of articulation, but it's cool because you can put him in a lot of cool different poses. He does have like this natural crouching look to him, which is what's intended for him anyways, to have more of a crouch, but it's permanent. It's a permanent crouch. The look, the face is pretty, it's very Jim Lee. So that's what makes this beast pretty awesome. This beast comes with a base that is kind of like gym pull-up bars, which I assume is a part of the danger room. So pretty awesome stuff for the beast. Trying to think of like really cool stuff. Well, like this beast right here actually has been like, this was the blue beast that we got in our display for the longest time. Only up until like last year when it was finally replaced by Hasbro. So a lot of people, this was the beast in their collections for the longest time. So I mean, people still have fond memories of this guy. If you notice his hips, the upper thigh joint is a T joint, followed by like this weird, I don't know what you call it. It's more like a I don't know, DC Classics kind of articulation on the hips there, or DC Superheroes articulation on the hips. It's very distinct, and it's only Beast and Punisher, which is also in this wave. It's only those two that I believe have it in the whole Marvel Legends series. So it's pretty unique, I think. Anyway, moving on to Elektra. This is the first time that we got a female figure in Marvel Legends. So Elektra holds that distinction. And this was a generic enough buck that they would go on to reuse this buck several more times down the line. And once they'll reuse it again once more in 2003. And I'll talk about that later on. This was not a bad figure for Elektra. It really does, like, in my opinion anyway, it does look like the artwork by Frank Miller. The artist who did this was his name is Steve Kiewis, and he was a pretty prolific sculptor for Toy Biz, and we'll see a little bit more of his work down the line. Anyway, Elektra comes with this like scabbard for her size and her swords that peg to the back, and also a Japanese house of some type. It's like a tiny house, so that's pretty cool. This Elektra, you could tell that Toy Biz was experimenting a lot with their female anatomy and articulation, and they haven't got it quite right just yet. So, you know, it looks weird. It's got like a Y crotch, again, with that same weird kind of a DC Universe Classics kind of a, I don't know, thigh articulation. But it isn't too bad looking at Elektra because there is that cloth, that loincloth or like the whatever that cloth is called that hangs in her, like over her crotch area, that covers a lot of the thigh articulation there. So that hides that. But again, they're experimenting, and Elektra doesn't, you know, for the most part, like when this figure came out, it wasn't too bad. And we see an ab crunch finally. So you have an ab crunch here with I believe a waist swivel as well. So, you know, not bad. So moving along, we have Elektra. Now let's go to Gambit. Now the thing about Gambit is that he's got cloth goods. He does have a canvas, like it's canvas material kind of type for his trench coat, which was really cool for its time. However, I'm starting like further down the line, you know, that trench coat really does start to get really annoying, especially when the figure starts to get loose. That trench coat starts to feel heavy. Anyway, that's just my opinion further down the line. But when this Gambit came out, some found it a little bit too skinny, but for the most part, this was like the definitive Gambit figure for a really long time. The sculpting was great. It's actually a very, very unique sculpt. And if you look at the other figures before Gambit, this was the very first time that a male figure actually has ab crunch. So take out Gambit's trench coat, and you'll see that he's got a waist swivel, and he's got an ab crunch, and also he's got ball jointed hips. And this is the very first time that we got ball jointed hips on a Marvel Legend figure. Take a look at the past figures before this, and you'll notice that there are no ball jointed hips. It started with Gambit. And yeah, look at the others, and you'll see that the other figures before Gambit had a waist swivel and a diaphragm, kind of a diaphragm joint for their torso, or they had no torso articulation altogether. But Gambit introduced the ab crunch. Now, I'm not sure if this body, which I believe it's a lot of the torso part, what do you call that? That neck piece that he's got is glued on, I think. So this was a generic body. And I'm not sure if it was ever reused in the Spider-Man Classics line. Again, I'm not paying too close attention to that line. But it may have been used for a Spider-Man figure in the Classics line. I'm not too sure. Anyway, Gambit is pretty unique in that it introduces a couple of new articulation points that are become the standard for Marvel Legends, especially in the Toy Biz era. So yeah, that's the distinction with this Gambit. Now, the thing with Gambit is that he came with a base that was the hand of a Sentinel. And this is kind of like around the time that people start noticing, hey, there seems to be a pattern with a lot of these X-Men bases. Magneto's base, Magneto from Series 3, he had a base which consisted of a broken Sentinel head. Now, Gambit has a Sentinel hand. So people are thinking, hey, these bases might actually connect together, or they're sort of a part of the same diorama. So a lot of people forget that these bases were huge. They were a big deal at the time, and they were just as detailed as the figures themselves. They didn't articulate, most of them didn't, but there were a lot of really cool innovations on the bases themselves. I didn't mention, for example, Series 1 Toad's base had had water, like imitation water. It was a transparent plastic that was laid on top, and it was made to look like a stream. It was pretty awesome. This Gambit and the Magneto base before it, this Gambit base was very well detailed. Like, the details were not spared on the bases. These bases were a big deal. Gambit came with a staff and an effect, like a glowing cards, kind of a energy effect. Now let's move on to the Punisher that came out in the same wave, Series 4. This was a very, very distinct Punisher, and it was actually the Punisher for most people, the definitive Punisher that ever came out, especially in the time of Toy Biz and even early Hasbro. This Series 4 Punisher was the definitive Punisher. It certainly was for me. This Punisher was sculpted by Dave Cortez, who is also a very prolific sculptor for Toy Biz. And there's actually a video of Dave Cortez. I think it was Boog Nice that posted it, where it was Boog Nice and Shardimus Prime going to Dave Cortez's studio in New York City, and they got a chance to see a lot of the prototypes for the early Marvel Legends figures. And this Punisher, I believe, was there. Now, the way that they sculpted these figures was they would sculpt them in 12 inches, so double the size of what they are now. So Dave Cortez, for example, sculpted these 6-inch figures in double the size, so he got a lot of the details in, and during production they would shrink his sculpt to the 1/12 scale. So that's what happened. And with this Punisher, there was a lot of details. I mean, Punisher's costume is as basic as you can get. It's white gloves, it's a skull that you could easily just painted on him, which is what we got from Hasbro. But they didn't skimp out on this Punisher. That skull was sculpted on, and those pants, there are sculpted creases on those pants. Those boots, they could have just been white boots, but no, these boots were, they have straps. They're very detailed. So yeah, this was definitely one of the coolest figures and one of my favorite Toy Biz figures for a really long time. Actually still is one of my favorite Toy Biz figures. Maybe not the Punisher, definitive Punisher that I have on my shelf now, but it held that spot for a really long time. This Punisher actually has a variant. I'm not sure if you can call it a variant, really. But there was some distinct difference between, like, the early release of this figure and later on down the line, and you can tell by that belt. So I'm not sure which came first, if it was the white belt or the black belt, but there are two versions of this Series 4 Punisher figure. And if you guys want to see the differences between the two, definitely check on Google Punisher Series 4 variant versus original release. I'm not sure. I wouldn't call it a variant, really. I think it's more of a running change. But yeah, there are two different versions of this guy. There's also, he's also got a base. And along with the base, he's also got a bunch of guns for accessories. Those guns look way more realistic then than they do now. I think Hasbro has a bit of a lot more limitations with the types of guns that they can put in these figures, but Toy Biz definitely did not have that. So yeah, the base that came with this Punisher was like it looks like a broken balcony, but there's one really distinct thing about this base, and that is that there's a little bit of a newspaper clipping that says something about the Mancuso crime family. Mancuso is not from the comics. It's actually an Easter egg by the guy who sculpts these bases. The guy who sculpts these bases for Toy Biz, his name is Bill Mancuso. And he put his last name as an Easter egg in the newspaper that you can find on the Punisher base. Pretty awesome stuff. And I do give props to Bill Mancuso for all of these awesome bases that we've been getting so far in the early days of Toy Biz Marvel Legends. Because those were top notch. And this was like before the time that people did ACBA, that kind of thing. So these bases were where people were posing their figures. That was hard to say. Yeah, so definitely props to him. Going forward now, I think that was the four. Now let's talk about the Chase figure, Goliath. And if you look at this Chase figure and compare him to the other figures that came before it, you'll see that this doesn't really hold its weight. It's not up to par sculpt wise and articulation wise and there's a reason for that. This Goliath Chase figure only came out maybe like once, like there was only, it was packed in maybe one per a couple of cases. So this was definitely the very definition of a chase figure, where you literally have to chase after the figure in the aftermarket because of how rare it is. This figure was repurpose. This Chase Goliath figure was repurposed from the original classic Avengers box set Giant Man figure that came out in 1998. So this was the classic Avengers box set, 5-inch line. It came with like the Hulk, Gold, Iron Man, Ant-Man and Wasp, and Thor. So the original Avengers, and this was a red and black painted Giant Man figure, and because it was five, like the box set was 5 inches in scale, this figure, which is like 8 inches or a little bit taller, it towers over the 5 inches, but it was also tall enough that you can actually fit him in Marvel Legends and still be taller than the Marvel Legends. So they put it in as a Marvel Legends figure, as Goliath, and that's Goliath with the yellow and blue costume. And that's what they did. So they repurposed an old Toy Biz figure to, like, mixed results, really. The one thing that makes this figure worth it, really, are the two extra figures that it came with, which is the small versions of Ant-Man and the Wasp in their classic costumes with some articulation. Those were really cool figures, and I believe they're also repurposed from previous Toy Biz figures from a smaller scale. I'm not sure exactly where from. But what's cool about that Ant-Man figure specifically is that it's got a removable helmet. And how awesome is that? It's so tiny. It's like 2 inches tall, really. And it's got a removable helmet. That's how off the charts. Like, that's how much Toy Biz put into their figure. It was awesome. In terms of my collection, I have all of these figures, but I did not get them at the same time. I only recently got that Goliath Chase figure, like, last year, I believe. So, yeah. I did get Gambit, and I got Punisher, and I did get Beast when they all came out. But Elektra I didn't find until later on. Yeah, not when they all came out. I bought them a little bit later, but I did buy them at retail. So, yeah, I didn't buy Goliath. I didn't find Elektra until later on. Anyway, you guys, I think we're going to end it there because we're kind of almost going an hour into these, the 2003 series, and we were just talking about one wave. There were one more wave that came out after this, plus two box sets that came out after this. So in the next episode, let's continue on talking about 2003 Marvel Legends. So I think I'm gonna leave it there, you guys. If you guys have any suggestions or any comments about this podcast episode or any other podcast episode, definitely leave me a voice message. And don't forget, you guys, to find me on Instagram at Articulatrix. Links in the description of this podcast. And I'm going to go get myself some water. And then I'm going to record the next episode here, which won't come out until next week. But definitely stay tuned. Thanks, you guys, for tuning in. I will see you next time.